Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, ISIS terror strikes France. Debate over Syrian refugees, the 2016 candidates, and national security. In Paris, shocking attacks. The French president says war. Parisians look for humanity.
We are at war.
Une guerre contre un terrorisme.
A message of tolerance, a message of solidarity, humanity. I think it's important to communicate about this.
Governors across the United States said no to Syrian refugees. Here's Governor Robert Bentley of Alabama on Monday.
When you know that some of the people that are coming from that region have the potential to be terrorists, we can't take a chance on that.
And President Obama defended his strategy to fight ISIS, arguing for cool heads at the G20 summit in Turkey.
Folks want to pop off and have opinions about what they think they would do. Present a specific plan.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Laura Mandeville of Le Figaro, Mark Mazzetti of The New York Times, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What are you thinking 1 week after the Paris attacks on ISIS, refugees, strategy, security? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Laura Mandeville, chief U.S. correspondent for the French newspaper Le Figaro. Laura, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom. It's nice to be with you.
I'm sorry for the trouble in Paris this week. We'll talk all about it. Also in Washington, Mark Mazzetti joins us, national security correspondent for the New York Times. Mark, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me back.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Laura, and Mark.
Let's hear a few more signs of response to what everyone has been fixated on this week in Paris. Here was President Obama at the G20 summit in Turkey on Monday, underscoring the U.S. strategy against ISIS and the setback.
We have always understood that this would be a long-term campaign. There will be setbacks and there will be successes. The terrible events in Paris were obviously a terrible and sickening setback.
Yes, sickening. French President Hollande on Wednesday saying, let's do more, interpreted here by Euronews.
I've called on the international community to take its part of responsibility in what can only be a common task to wipe out Daesh.
And Donald Trump saying he didn't want to go in for the Iraq war, but we should go in now, beat the bleep out of these people, he says.
I said, don't go into Iraq. I was right. I said, now we got to go and we got to knock the shit out of these people. We got to do it. We've got to do it.
Donald Trump in Worcester, Massachusetts, this week. Laura Mandeville, do you see an alliance coming together here that wasn't here a week ago or not?
Well, I think it's really a key question. You know, there has been a lot of announcements by President Hollande, you know, for a big alliance against ISIS with the Russians, with the Americans, and potentially with other European countries, been calling them to help. But for now, I think we should remain really cautious about what are going to be the contours of this alliance, what exactly is going to happen, how much are we going to give up to the Russians in terms of, you know, trade-offs if we ally with them, what do they want exactly? All these questions are totally unclear for now, and we're going to have to look into what is happening, you know, on the 24th between Obama and Hollande, and then later on in the week between Hollande and Putin to have a clearer option.
The French president in Washington next week with President Obama and then talking with Putin as well. Mark Mazzetti, step back here. Now we've got Mali, different outfit, but nevertheless, why is this happening now? Why this surge of attacks outside of ISIS territory, outside of Syria, outside of Iraq? What's the security community's interpretation of why this is happening now?
Well, first of all, on the breaking situation in Mali, we don't yet know who's responsible. It may take sometime to know. There are various claims of responsibility, but we have to decide. You know, it'll be clearer in the coming days exactly whether it's ISIS or not, right?
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different groups in Mali. And but to your question, you know, why has ISIS, which seemed for some time content to be a state that was trying to consolidate its power, why carry out these outside attacks? Well, it's a good question. The security community has been split on what ISIS's ultimate goals were, and now you heard CIA Director John Brennan this week talk about this external operations branch for ISIS, which is committed to doing things in the West, carrying out attacks in Europe. It is there is some analysis that ISIS, which has seen some of its territory shrunk over the year because mm-hmm. of the air campaign, is lashing out as a result of that, is trying to intimidate other countries from becoming involved in the campaign, and it is acting more like a traditional terror network than it has in the past.
So do you buy that this is a sign of ISIS weakness on its home turf or something else, Mark?
Well, I think that – I mean, there's no question that ISIS has lost territory. But the fundamental facts still exist that ISIS is still has its stronghold, still has the heart of its territory. It has a extremely large budget that it gets from oil revenues on the black market, from taxation, etc. So there has been some progress against ISIS, but there has not been they're far from being a defeated organization. It is hard to – I mean, it's really speculation about whether it's just a sign of weakness or not. What is clear, though, it's becoming increasingly clear that they are adopting techniques that we had not seen before. So remember, not just Paris, but in recent in the past week, we've seen a confirmation that the Russian charter plane that went down a couple weeks ago mm-hmm. in the Sinai was also part of was an ISIS attack. Now, why is that significant? And the first question that came up was about alliances. What I think will be interesting going forward is how Russia responds. We've seen Russia in the last month and a half get involved in Syria on the surface to go after ISIS. But what we saw was Russian attacks were not really against ISIS targets. They were against anti-Assad forces, in other words, to bolster Russia's primary ally in Syria. This may change now. We may see Russia more committed to fighting ISIS because of the attack on the Russian charter jet.
Maybe. Hold that thought, though, because others are saying, well, maybe the U.S. will have to live with Assad. Lots of focus this week on President Obama's kind of steady-as-she-goes attitude in the wake of the Paris attacks. Doesn't want to repeat the national freakout of post-9/11. But from both parties, you heard what sounded like, well, here from John McCain talking with NPR's Steve Inskeep on Tuesday. Very tough criticism of that. McCain.
You can fight them there or you can fight them here. That's your choice now. That's your choice. And obviously the president wants to fight them here. But I would rather fight them there.
The president wants to fight them here. I doubt that somehow. And yet he got that critique this week. And Hillary Clinton yesterday with her big speech to the Council on Foreign Relations talking about ISIS seemed to at pains to be in her policy suggestions and tone tougher than Obama.
Our goal is not to deter or contain ISIS, but to defeat and destroy ISIS.
Jack Beatty, what do you see in the range of responses now on the table politically, strategically, to what has been the American approach here?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton's latest proposals really smack of politics. On the one hand, she says that the strategic objective in Syria post-Paris is not ousting Assad, but defeating ISIS. On the other hand, she urges a no-fly zone along the Syrian-Turkish border. ISIS doesn't have an air force, so the no-fly zone would be against Assad and mm-hmm. would begin with an attack on his air defense system, an act of war. Her tactics, a no-fly zone against Assad, contradict her strategy to destroy ISIS. Her policies may be muddled, but as you intimated, Tom, their politics is clear. To position herself as more hawkish than President Obama, but less bellicose than the GOP candidates, and to think that she had the brass to admonish the Republicans that, with Paris still reeling, quote, now was no time to be scoring political points.
Laura Mandeville, help us with your French perspective on this potential alliance. The French president talking with the U.S., talking with Russia. How would these fit together? Do they fit together, Laura? Can the goals be aligned?
I mean, this is really, really the tough question. That's what I was saying a bit earlier, is that, the French are so horrified. There is such outrage and anger that there is really a willingness, maybe a little bit like after 9/11 here in the US, to sort of formulate a very tough response. And there is this willingness to go and destroy ISIS and calling everybody to do that. But at the same time, there is the question, how do you do that? Once you've destroyed, if we go in, and there is some kind of willingness to go in and destroy, the positions of ISIS in Raqqa, even put some, forces on the ground, special ops plus, different, scenario which are being sort of prepared in the Pentagon, as I know, even if they're not, public. What do we do after, what is happening? So I think this is the question which has been asked by President Obama, and he's been trying, to get some kind of response in terms of political agreement with the Russians. And the question is that we don't know what the Russians are willing to give. I mean, everyone is sort of speculating that Putin is going to give up maybe on Assad and there will be some kind of political agreement. And John Kerry has been, trying to say that this could happen. But for now, isn't it the opposite which is going to happen? I'm quite worried, when I see, for instance, the president of the Senate in France calling for, lifting the sanctions on Russia and putting Russia at the center of this big coalition. There is a mood in France saying that the Americans have been not particularly effective, that they don't know what they want, and that we should ally with the Russians. And you have all these, right-wing parties, especially the ultra-right, but also many people in the Gaullist party saying, let's go with the Russians. And I find that very worrying.
Laura Mandeville, please hold the thought with Le Figaro with us today from Washington. So glad to have you here. Mark Mazzetti with The New York Times, Jack Beatty. We are looking at a week in the news. Behind us, the sound of soccer fans and players singing the French national anthem Tuesday night, Wembley Stadium in England. Lots of solidarity with the French this week. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, and what a week. ISIS, terror in Paris, Syrian refugee debate, white hot in this country, the 2016 contenders taking positions on security and more. We will look at all of it. Mark Mazzetti is with us, national security correspondent for The New York Times. From Le Figaro, the French newspaper, chief U.S. correspondent Laura Mandeville is here. And Jack Beatty joins us as well, On Point news analyst. You can join us this hour. How are you making sense of this week, of Paris, the threats, humanity? What's going on here? Does the world, does the U.S. have the right strategy yet to confront ISIS? Are you with Obama? Don't freak out. Stay the course. Are you freaking out, eager to do more? And where do you stand on Syrian refugees and the USA? Accept them, reject them, take only Christians? Which 2016 candidate is speaking for you post-Paris? Who's not? Why? And then, of course, as Paris was still reeling and the perpetrators being tracked down, many ultimately killed, on Monday, ISIS released this video threatening the United States, interpreted here by CNN.
We say to the countries that participate in the Crusader campaign, I swear to God, a similar day that France went through, you will go through. I swear to God, as we struck France and its stronghold, Paris, we will strike America and its stronghold, Washington, with God's will.
Okay, all kinds of reactions here to Paris and more on Tuesday. Laura Mandeville talking about Russia. Here was the Russian President Vladimir Putin vowing revenge on the terrorists for the downed airplane. Russians said it was a bomb, killed 224 people, interpreted here by CNN. Putin.
We will search for them everywhere, wherever they are hiding. We will find them in any spot on the planet, and we will punish them.
Mark Mazzetti, interpret President Obama's very, very, there's a sense that he's so incredibly deliberately even-keeled this week. He's not getting bellicose. He's not, everybody wants him to be, but he's not. Is what's going on here with the president's, what seems to be very deliberate, low-key tone?
It's really an extension of Obama's rhetoric, public statements over the last several years about Syria and then later about ISIS. We've watched this president for several years wrestle with the issue of what to do about the situation in Syria. And that was when it was a more traditional civil war, and President Obama repeatedly saying the United States should stay out because there's no interest of the United States. But then when it morphed into something bigger and with the emergence of ISIS, we saw the president talk about American interests in Syria and eradicating ISIS. But even then, he is clearly trying to keep this line where the United States does not rush in because of emotion to do things like the Iraq War of 2003. That's his sort of guiding principle. And so I think what Obama seems to be doing is trying to, you say even keel, he's trying to stay as unemotional, I suppose, as possible in the midst of a lot of very, very deep emotion.
Let's go to Brendan, calling from Belchertown, Massachusetts. Brendan, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I'm concerned that there's a problem with overbombing. It's an emotional response, and it's not necessarily effective. At some point, it's counterproductive, like the Russian dumb bombs. I mean, how many innocents were killed with those Russian dumb bombs? And again, I think Obama's right.
Laura, let me bring that to you. Lots of French bombing runs this week, and people's wondering, what is this? Are they really hurting ISIS, or is this the French need to show, you know, warlike spirit here after these terrible attacks? Are these strategic? Are they important? Are they symbolic, Laura?
Yeah, I think there is really a symbolic aspect to that. I mean, it's really, you know, we are going to show that we can wage this war. We have actually a war declared. That's what the French are saying. And so there is this willingness, you know, to strike that you had after 9/11, I think, in the US as well. What I wanted to say, though, is that, you know, it's been really striking how Obama over the years has really tried to keep the Syrian crisis, you know, away from the US and mm-hmm. probably, you know, missed some important moments, like in August 2013, when he decided not to go for any kind of strikes, even as a show of force. And I think it has, resonated throughout the world that, you know, the Americans were in a way were weak. So maybe he was right in the long term, but he's actually enabled the enemies to score tactical points. And for instance, when you look at the Russians, you know, how they sort of went in, you know, sort of scoring on the American weakness and making this show of force, although they haven't solved anything, you know, they've struck. And as the person who phoned said, we don't know, you know, what were the consequences of these bombings, how effective they were. So I think there is a really also a media war and propaganda war being waged by different parties at this moment. And what I see is that the West is not winning this war. You know, there is the ideological war by ISIS, which is, you know, sort of propagating all these video to scare everyone. And I don't see a good response. There is also the ideological war of the Russian, who are trying to divide Europe in order to show that the Americans are totally weak and impotent, and that Europe should go with the Russians. And I really think that, you know, the very difficult situation in Europe at the moment is that we are in some way a bit like in the 30s between two geostrategic threats, very big ones. We have on the one hand an enemy from within, which is radical Islam. And I don't understand why President Obama doesn't want to name this enemy, because really there is a battle in Islam and there is a problem within Islam, not with all of Islam, but with part of Islam. And the other, threat at the moment is, of course, the, you know, sort of Russian behavior, you know, attacking, annexing Crimea, and then this sort of stealthy war in Ukraine. And what is going to happen? What are the Russians going to do? How are they going to take advantage of this situation with Islam, radical Islam, to score points in Europe and divide the transatlantic alliance? I think these are very linked questions, and we should look at them in some kind of global way.
Jack Beatty, there certainly is a deep sort of unbuttoned feeling right now, not buttoned up by any means. What about the Obama administration staying, you know, firm also on this, let's not talk radical Islam? George W. Bush, of course, assiduously avoided that for much of his presidency. But now in 2015, is that still the right path, Jack?
Well, I thought Hillary Clinton sensibly addressed that in Saturday's debate when she said, look, we want Saudi Arabia, we want Turkey, we want Jordan, we want the other Gulf states to cooperate with us in containing ISIS. And it will not help us in that endeavor to be, you know, using the charge word Islamic. Jihadi, fine, but don't put Islamic in there because you're going to offend the people we need to count on.
But how much are they helping? And is there not, as Laura says, perhaps a problem within Islam with part of it?
Undoubtedly. And, you know, people are talking about there needs to be a, quote, reformation within Islam, a kind of debate that will, you know, separate the vast majority of people and their orthodox interpretation of holy texts against this fanatical apocalyptic sect. Nevertheless, if you're making policy for the United States, you've got to take this kind of thing in mind. And I think Hillary Clinton spoke like a former Secretary of State. And by the way, that's the way George W. Bush and his people spoke.
Yes, of course. Tom, they also went to war. Mark, yes?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one other aspect to this, which is that what's happening in the Middle East right now is there's this even further bifurcation and split between the Sunni and the Shia world. This is a sort of post-Arab Spring phenomenon where you ask why Saudi Arabia, the UAE, these countries not more committed to fighting ISIS. They have been committed to the campaign, but they see their primary concern and threat still to be Iran, Shia Iran versus the Sunni Gulf.
Which
right?
means so, Assad as well.
Which means Assad, as well as, for instance, the war in Yemen. They are very committed to bombing in Yemen, which a Shiite rebel group in Yemen has taken over. So that is their primary concern right now. It's not the so-called, you know, radical Islam, radical Sunni Islam.
But all that means, Mark, there is no coalescing of forces that would focus on ISIS. I mean, think back to the Gulf. That is unnerving. As Laura says, in Europe, you've got these polarized kind of winds there. Globally, there's no sense of concerted effort. I think that's got people as uneasy as anything here, Mark.
That's right. I mean, trying to get a coalition, a very, very unwieldy coalition together with very, very different interests. Again, going back to the Europeans, the Russians, the Gulf, everyone has their own agenda. And it is hard to imagine a really sustained global coalition against ISIS that could withstand all of these different agendas.
Feels more like a vacuum. Bob in Knoxville, Tennessee. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, what I'd like to say is maybe it's time to quit fighting ISIS piecemeal and follow the North strategy during the Civil War and Sherman and declare war on the people and the land. And maybe by doing that, maybe the people would finally say, you know, enough's enough. We just can't do it. But I don't think you'll defeat them by fighting them piecemeal.
You sort of rain of fire. But, Bob, what about all the people within Syria and Iraq who actually don't support ISIS? They themselves have been, are living under the boot of ISIS. How do you have a Sherman march to the sea when
that's true. I'm not so sure, as in Vietnam, why the United States always seems to back those who don't have the will to fight. But I don't know what to do about that. That's true. But maybe if you did, maybe they would all rise up, sort of what the Irish did, on and say, you know, enough's enough.
Yeah. Bob, I appreciate it. That itch is certainly out there. And politically, we'll talk about that. Donald Trump saying, you know, bomb the crap out of them. Roger in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Thanks for calling, Roger. You're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. I'm glad you took my call right after that one, because I've got kind of an opposite point of view. First of all, there's a big difference between understanding something and explaining it, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I do not condone anything that happened in Paris or anything ISIL is doing around the world, but we have to understand something. There are an awful lot of people in that part of the world that feel walked upon by our culture. They feel they're being overwhelmed by a culture they don't understand and they don't approve of. They think our fashions are disgusting. They think our morals are horrible. They think our religion is apostate. And these are the people that provide a breeding ground for people like ISIS. Now, what's the solution? I have no idea, but I think it's a profound problem. And we've got to go all the way down to bedrock if we're going to erect a foundation for a stable peace. Somehow, we've got to give these people room to work out their own cultural destiny without feeling that they're under the gun from us and from other outside influences.
Hey, Roger, I get that impulse. I totally get it. But it is tough when they're not under our gun so much right now as under the ISIS gun, and ISIS guns then also blazing away in Paris and beyond. I mean, that thirst for a solution is deep. We hear it. But how to find it? And it's so politically loaded as we go. That really emerged this week when it came to Syrian refugees. The United States saying these are deeply vetted, but lots of governors standing up and saying we don't want them in our states. And Republican presidential candidates jumping right on that same bandwagon. Here was Chris Christie on Monday talking with Hugh Hewitt, saying New Jersey was among the 31 states resisting accepting Syrian refugees.
I do not trust this administration to effectively vet the people who are proposed to be coming in order to protect the safety and security of the American people, so I would not permit them in.
What if they were orphans under the age of five?
You know, Hugh, we could come up with 18 different scenarios. The fact is that we need appropriate vetting, and I don't think orphans under five are being, should be admitted into the United States at this point.
Jack Beatty, what about the politics of this, the refugee issue? And Chris Christie, orphans under five? Nope, not even them.
Yeah, and then only Christians, and then some say, no, we can't have Christians, and Rupert Murdoch says, well, proven Christians, whatever that is. You know, Tom, all of this has echoes of an episode in American history when fear overrode decency. The stream of refugees, I'm quoting, a State Department official wrote, provides a perfect opening for Germany to load the U.S. with agents. We alerted our friends in Latin America to that danger, and on May 27, 1939, the SS St. Louis, a ship of the Hamburg-American line, entered Havana Harbor with 930 Jewish refugees aboard. Cuba refused them asylum. Negotiators pleaded with Washington, let them debark at a U.S. port. Meanwhile, the St. Louis slowly steamed up the East Coast, shadowed all the while by a Coast Guard cutter with orders to return to the ship any refugees who tried to swim ashore. Eventually, it went back to Europe. Over 250 of the refugees it landed were murdered in the Holocaust. Senator Elizabeth Warren...
Jews sent back to Europe before World War II.
That's right.
Yeah.
Senator Elizabeth Warren may declare, we are not a nation that delivers children back into the hands of ISIS murderers, but we were a nation that delivered Jewish children back into the hands of Hitler. And if a bipartisan majority in the House, a host of governors, as you mentioned, and most of the GOP candidates have their way, we will be that morally numb nation again.
Laura Mandeville, what's your French perspective on the American debate over refugees at this point? Of course, Europe has the refugee issue on an entirely different and greater scale.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I find a bit ironical to listen to this debate after, so many articles I saw in the American press, when the big migration crisis started in September. There were so many articles saying, oh, the Europeans are so unwelcoming, they are terrible. And we had hundreds of thousands of people coming in without any kind of vetting, sort of just flooding into Europe. And the Americans were sort of very quick and prompt to give us lessons of what we should do. So I find it ironical, frankly, because you have only, the perspective of 10,000 refugees. I understand that the people are worried and they want a lot of vetting. This is, I think, quite normal. It's kind of safe, protecting sort of a... self-predating reflex, which is natural. Of course, there's a lot of politicking in that. What I can say is that concerning Europe, it's probably going to be a huge issue. Although, as you know, most of these terrorists were born actually in France.
Yes.
Or in Belgium. So actually, the question that we how we see it now in Europe is about the borders, and that's going to be a huge debate. I mean, today you have a big meeting between European ministers of the interior about what are we going to do. I mean, the French minister Cazeneuve has asked for a strengthening and nearly closing of the external borders of the EU with serious, control and the end of actually this sort of open border policy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, if you can turn your ears away for just a moment, actor Charlie Sheen appeared on the Today Show Tuesday, told the world he is HIV positive.
It's a hard three letters to absorb, you know? It's a turning point in one's life.
Atlantic writer Ta-Nehisi Coates won the National Book Award for Nonfiction for Between the World and Me, a book about the realities of being black in America, written as a letter to his teenage son.
Every day, you know, you cut on the TV and you see some sort of violence being directed at black people. You see a young girl being flipped out of a chair and dragged across a floor in a school. You see somebody being choked to death.
Ta-Nehisi Coates and superstar Adele's latest album, 25, out today, her first in almost 5 years. Here's Send My Love to Your New Lover.
You told me you were ready for the big one, for the big jump. I'd be your last love.
Looking at a week in the news, ISIS terror in Paris, the Syrian refugee debate with Laura Mandeville of Le Figaro, Mark Mazzetti of the New York Times, Jack Beatty is here. Lots of people writing online. Chris says Hillary's no-fly zone in North Syria helps cut off the flow to ISIS of supplies and recruits. Jack Beatty forgets this in condemning her, Chris says. Well, that for you, Jack. Fafa writes to us, Obama's measured reasoning may not work with an uninformed citizenry giving to political theatrical manipulation. It is a political season, no doubt about that, and yet the death in Paris is real. Adam says, we can't march like Sherman on the Mideast. We'll just create a new generation of terrorists. All those on Twitter at On Point Radio. You can join us. Where do you stand on the Syrian refugees? Which 2016 candidate is speaking for you post-Paris? Were you listening to Bernie Sanders on his American democratic socialism? I want to stick with the refugee issue for just a moment. Here was Jeb Bush talking with NBC's Meet the Press last Sunday saying, well, let's focus on some.
We have a responsibility to help with refugees after proper screening. And I think our focus ought to be on the Christians who have no place in Syria anymore.
Here's Rakia Juma, Syrian refugee, already settled in Florida, talking with ABC News on Tuesday.
We are not terrorists. We are family, ready to leave country, to leave home, to save kids.
But the House has moved on this. Democrats, along a bunch of them, along with nearly all the Republicans, I guess, to slow down or stop the refugee flow into this country. Here's Paul Ryan.
It just is common sense that we pause, reevaluate, and make sure that we have the proper standards in place to make sure something like what happened in Paris doesn't happen here.
Jean in Edinburgh, Virginia. Jean, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. I think the House of Representatives has just given ISIS a Christmas present. I mean, that's exactly what they want. They want us to be mean-spirited, not help the refugees, which we helped create the problem that had these refugees. We need to do the right thing, take in the refugees, and not feed the terror. That's exactly what we are reacting exactly like they want us to do. And all this bombing, not really knowing where you're bombing and who you're bombing and who you're killing. I mean, these are families, people who are trying to live their lives, and they're trying to get help, and we need to do the right thing, and we need to help them and stop being such cowards.
Jean, I appreciate your call. Mark Mazzetti, you're the national security correspondent. What's a sober security analysis of the threat or lack of threat in a Syrian refugee flow into the United States?
Well, I think it will be interesting to see how history judges what's happened in the last week in Washington. I think that there has been a lot of rhetoric. The politics of fear have been pervasive. In terms of the threat, no one will tell you that there is an insignificant or a zero chance that letting someone in the country would mean that there's no chance of a terrorist attack. At the same time, the United States has let in refugees in large numbers since 9/11, and the number that have been under any kind of suspicion of terrorist activities is minuscule. At the same time, the Obama administration has said they will carefully vet any Syrian refugees who come into the country. There are questions about how that vetting could take place, but there is a lot being thrown around I think potentially will just come back to haunt the United States down the road. I mean, you heard one mayor this week talk about the example of the Japanese internment as possibly a good model for how the United States should deal with this issue. Now, I think one thing history is fairly united on is the fact that that was a very dark chapter in the United States, and it was totally unnecessary. So this is what we've been dealing with this week.
I mean, Jack, some of the things I have to say struck my ear as just shocking. Donald Trump and talking about a database to register all Muslims living in the United States. Now, as often happens with Trump, he may be denying something. He said this or didn't say that, but it's right out there around him. And to my ear, that was just so foreign, so strange, registering people on the basis of their religion for some kind of surveillance or database. Look, I understand people are upset about security issues, but this, Jack, what is this?
Well, it's a kind of moral panic, isn't it? And look at the numbers. Mark referenced them in a general way, but his colleague Nick Kristof gave them yesterday. Since 9/11, the United States has taken in 785,000 refugees. Just three of them have been charged with any terrorism-related activities. Just three. On the other hand, as Dianne Feinstein and others are now saying, wait a minute, these tourist visas where people can just come are, students and no checking it there at all. Shouldn't we deal with that as a serious problem? Instead, they're focusing on the Syrian refugee, this sinister other who, that quotation, that sound we had from that plaintive sound from the woman who said, I'm just trying to protect my family. That's the reality of these people, and it is shameful and almost off the page of what one would expect, and especially because it was, just to reiterate, it was such an achievement of the Bush administration to again and again say we are not involved with any religious conflict, and we have Marco Rubio now on television saying there's a clash of civilizations.
And, I mean, Trump, the same who would, smear Mexicans, now going after Muslims. I mean, the notion that after all the mass shootings we've seen with white guys wielding the gun, that there's Mark in Urbandale, Iowa. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I went out this morning just to the, I think it's the commerce.gov or whatever, our government site. And it says that we have 100 million visitors to the United States each year. That's like, 300,000 a day?
It's a lot. We're a big like open that. Country.
Yeah, well, why, they're not being vetted for 3 years, and we're worried about 30,000 people who are going to die? I think it's time to get real.
Or 10,000. I appreciate your call. I mean, Mark, there is a push now to look at these visa-free travelers into the United States and maybe shut that down. That's not all 100 million of our visitors, but it's maybe, I think, there are 20 plus million a year who come from Europe and other, friendly countries or that in fact, that may change. This is a big difference in the way commerce and international travel would work to the United States.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't follow the presidential campaign regularly, but clearly there is a climate right now that that these attacks, like in Paris and elsewhere, feed into the climate where It moves people's opinion in a certain direction. It moves politicians to say certain things. And policies, long-standing policies we've had about immigration, about student visas, about accepting refugees, all of a sudden come into question. And I think sometimes that is when good public policy is not made sometimes in this climate.
Tom in Mason City, Iowa. Tom, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I had made a comment, and I've heard other people say things similar, that these politicians, both Democrat and Republican, need to get their history books out and realize that where we get these terrorists from, where these radical people get people to fight with them, is from marginalized, disenfranchised people. And, if we're going to create more of them, then we're going to have more terrorists. We need to hold our hands and our arms out, not push them away.
What about the security side of it, Tom? Does that give you no pause?
Pardon me?
The security side of it. Does it give you no pause? I mean, is there no issue?
Not in regards to, here's the thing. I think if somebody wants to get in this country, much like 9/11, they're going to get in. And it's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to come from a bunch of widowed women and orphaned children, though.
Yep. Tom, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. One more right here from Salima in Boston. Salima, thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say quickly that I do not think that this is really an attack on the terrorists, and the whole refugee thing is really becoming an attack on Muslims. And me being a Muslim living in Boston in the U.S., it has become extremely uncomfortable. Every day that I'm walking outside, I have people commenting, telling me to go back home, telling me that I'm a terrorist, and it makes it really uncomfortable because constantly the TV is on and you hear, like, I'm in public spaces and there's the TV or the radio and there's this negative commentary about Muslims and Islam. And it's just giving people the attitude and the feeling that they have the right to attack Muslims directly because all Muslims are terrorists.
Salima, I'm sorry to hear that, but do you mean that literally, that when you're on the street, and do you wear a head covering, Salima, may I ask?
Yes, I do. And it is. It's like I didn't. It wasn't as apparent before. Like, I've had people come up to me. Like, I go to school. I do walk on the streets. I go shopping, grocery shopping.
And people really are saying these things to you? You're not exaggerating to us? They really are saying...
No, I am. Yes, I am not exaggerating. I honestly would not have called if it was not, like, a serious issue. Because before it was, okay, once in a while someone would come up. I get that. Because there are ignorant people.
Yeah.
But now it's becoming to a point where I feel uncomfortable to go grocery shopping alone.
I hate to hear that. You don't have to be a security expert, but if you're thinking about it, what do you think ought to happen with ISIS and U.S. policy, Salima?
Well, a lot of the Muslims are against it, and me as one, I'm totally against it, and I do not believe that Islam
against
is
ISIS.
Yeah. I think that against ISIS, yes, mm-hmm. I am completely against any type of terrorism or any type of acts against, like, just any types of terror or acts, because Islam is a religion of peace. And even, like, as I was listening to your show, one person commented saying that there is something wrong with Islam. I disagree with that completely. There is nothing wrong with Islam. There is something wrong with the way that these people are interpreting Islam. So,
Salima, I wish you good luck, and I just express solidarity. And I'm sorry for what you're facing in the streets. That's not where we want to go here. It has to be much more thoughtful and not just based on a visual prejudice, for heaven's sakes. But Lord Mandeville, you've been thinking a lot about this issue within Islam. Salima says there's a problem not of Islam, but there, some within who have gone down this road. How would that be confronted, Lore?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would be, of course, a huge mistake to say that the fight is against Muslims in general. And I think precisely the huge challenge in France, where we have a huge, very big Muslim minority, is going to be to win over the Muslims so that they stay with us, that there is not this polarization between the native French and the Muslim-born French, Muslim, you know, in France, because that's exactly what ISIS wants. They want to sow discord between the Muslim community and the other French people. So this is a huge challenge. But at the same time, we shouldn't be blind. I mean, you know, hell is sometimes paved with good intentions. If we are blind to the fact that there is a problem in Islam, we're not going to win this battle. I mean, it's kind of a schizophrenic approach to say, okay, we are allies with Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries, so we don't see that this Salafist ideology, which is in the Islamic world and is actually hijacking Islam in many ways, you know, sort of killing Muslims over the world, that it's not a problem in Islam. A lot of Muslim thinkers now are calling for a sort of awakening of Muslims and fighting this ideology openly, in the open. For instance, I can tell you that today in Paris, on the Friday prayer, all of the French mosques have put together a text, you know, absolutely criticizing what is happening and saying, okay, we're going to fight this. So they at last, they're starting to acknowledge that there is a problem in Islam. And I think that, you know, turning away our head is not going to solve the problem.
Salima, our caller, solidarity to you and your opposition to ISIS and to all. Let's be very careful about broad brush here. This has to stay sober and respectful of all Americans. Jack Beattie, just a moment here on Bernie Sanders at the end of this week. I've got a little tape, talked about democratic socialism yesterday. Here he is.
Democratic socialism means that we must reform a political system which is corrupt, that we must create an economy that works for all, not just the very wealthy.
Jack, security has risen like the cliffs of Dover this week, but there is still an American economy and still a conversation going on out there. Bernie Sanders trying to clarify his place in it yesterday with a big speech.
And the Gallup poll found a majority of Americans support his main issue, redistribution through the tax code. You know, he's not a socialist on the European model. He's a New Dealer representing what Mike Harrington called the left wing of the possible within the Democratic Party. How left we know, how possible, we'll discover when the voting starts.
New Deal, Bernie Sanders throwing him around, his arms around the New Deal face yesterday with his speech. I'm so grateful to all three of you for being here today. Laure Mandeville with Le Figaro, French newspaper, chief U.S. correspondent. Laure, thank you for taking time out in this week of all weeks to be with us today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Tom, for having me.
And good luck to Paris and to France. Mark Mazzetti, national security correspondent with the New York Times. It's always great to have you, Mark. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beattie, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica, with help from Fatima Tanis and Dave Tarantino. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.